to another episode of What You Doin' Podcast, the podcast where I talk to cool people about the amazing stuff that they're working on. This time I'm sitting down with Ryan Lynch, aka Outrider Creative, to talk about the new adventure for his game Perils and Princesses, Secret of the Night Market. I've been such a big fan of Ryan's stuff since the moment I came across it, and he was one of the first names I wrote down as potential guests when I was brainstorming the podcast, and to get him on was a really big treat. Now, as always, everything we talk about will be in the show notes. Links to all of Ryan's socials and websites and all of that will be in the show notes, but let's get on with it. I'm so mad. I interviewed Rowan from Rascal last week.
Yeah.
I forgot the video. Just never started the video.
Just never recorded it.
Just never clicked the button. And then we're like 10 minutes from finishing. And I look over to look at the time to be like, okay, we're keeping the time. And I see start recording. And I went, oh no.
Like, over the past couple of years, like, hopping on these or, like, games or whatever, I don't think I've ever done one that went 100% no technical difficulties or mistakes or anything like that.
No, it's impossible. Impossible. It's the thing. It's the frustration is more that it was, like, that it was that one more than anything else. You know, not that any interview is more important than any other one. I get it. It's silly. And that's,
no.
But also, it's just like, oh, man, why did it have to be this one?
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to What You Doin'. I'm Matt. I'm joined today by Ryan, aka Outrider Creative. Ryan, say hello.
Oh, hey. No, thanks for having me on. This is I'm looking forward to chatting.
We're here to chat about Perils and Princesses. Sweet Dreams is the subtitle. I remember correctly?
Yeah. So, no. The next one. No.
That's fine. That's fine. No. Say no. It was wrong.
No, that's not it. The next thing coming out is called Secret of the Night Market.
I should remember that because I love the concept of the night market.
It's a cool, it has kind of a cool origin story in terms of how we ended up doing it. It's such a cool folklore and fantasy trope. It actually came from our in-person Perils and Princesses game that Sean, the editor of Perils and Princesses, has been running. We just finished it up a year later. So we ran about 20 sessions.
It's a lot.
It was a lot, especially for this game. We were side questing. We play short games, too. We play, like, two-hour sessions sometimes.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like, I think other people could do it quicker, but we're big proponents of, like, a short game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, early on, he had this cool location. It was the night market. We, like, loved side questing there and, like, spent a couple sessions there. And he had said offhand, like, hey, this one was pretty good. I'd be cool to, like, actually publish this someday. And I was, you know, a while later, I was like, hey, you should, like, let's do it. Like, you know, you, we should just not, you know, you were talking about it, but, like, someday could be today. Let's make it, you know.
I wonder if he did that around the time I did a playtest with him for something that still isn't available as far as I know. So we'll talk around that. But it also featured a night market type location.
Funny.
Yeah, like funny. Very specifically. And I think it came up in play. I don't recall if it was like his idea or if it came up. And so I wonder how connected those two things are, because that'd be funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible for sure.
It's a great idea. So, like, you know, you have a fun idea pop up, use it in multiple games. Why not?
Does it hurt? Like, you don't have to. Yeah, there's no rules.
What I'm saying is Sean owes me money is what I'm getting at. I want a credit in the book and Sean owes me $5. Matt, did you come up with the idea? No, I'm fairly certain, but that's what I've decided.
That was great. Yeah. I mean, it's a fun way to do, like, even if it's not like a goblin market, it's a fun way to do like a shopping episode where it's you get in, but how do you get out now? Mm-hmm. Like, now you got to solve this mystery or, you know, figure out the way to get out and talk. And then it forces you to talk to all these cool people. And like, at the same time, you can like look for cool magic items and do cool trades and, you know, just check out weird stuff in sort of a non-linear way. It was a fun session. And then, you know, it was inspiring enough where I wanted to do a bunch of artwork for it, and I wanted to do something that wasn't... I spent the past couple of years doing, like, huge 100-page-plus books, and I wanted to do a short one this year.
Yeah.
When I weaned myself off of doing an enormous project.
Well, and that's a good idea, I think. Like, that's the fun of something like Zine Month, which is, you know, come up every time, of, like, doing something small, getting something done, not letting it... It forces you to have a smaller project, right? You could do a 100-page book for Zine Month, but I, you know, a lot of people are keeping it short, to the point. I guess not short, concise is the word. And I think an adventure for something that you've already done is a great opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of the guesswork out. Like, we already have... I mean, I still want to get it out and get some like additional thoughts on it, because it's so in, like, because he ran it and I played it, like, we have an idea how it exists. So there's like the challenge of making it into not only like a document that other people can pick up and run with, but one that's very catered to like someone who might be new to the space or new to the games. Like, that's one of the sort of tenets of Perils and Princesses, is that it's like not meant to be esoteric, or not meant to it's meant to give you all the tools if you're, you know, coming into this pretty fresh, you know?
Mm-hmm. So usually I focus on like the thing when you know, for these interviews, like I focus on the product that's currently, you know, being crowdfunded or whatever. But I feel like it would be very hard to do that and not talk about Perils and Princesses.
Yeah.
By extension. So what was kind of your original, sort of inspiration for Perils and Princesses? What was the thing that made you say, like, you know what I want to do is I want to write a game?
Yeah. That good question. There's like a few, there's a few sort of factors that sort of birthed Perils and Princesses. And I mean, coming from design and illustration, like, I had always wanted to make some kind of book, like, forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's like that has always been an undercurrent of, like, I would love to illustrate a whole book, and to do the design or whatever. And then, you know, a few years back, I've got two kids. I've got, an older kid who's like 12 now. He was like 8 or 9 at the time. And then a younger kid, and she's like, now she's like almost 5, but, I was beginning of the pandemic. I was playing, you know, my older kid was very interested in fantasy role-playing games. We were playing more games together. He was, I was running D&D for my family. He was running games for me.
That's cute. I love that.
Yeah, where he was that's like his mind too. He always kind of, like, when he was little, would draw, basically, like, take a big piece of paper and draw out like a Metroid, Super Metroid map. and have me like, basically talk through how I would go through this map, and he would tell me all these things. Like, he like invented like a dungeon, like Metroid style dungeon crawl on his own. He called them like amazes.
I love it.
Incredible. So having him run D&D, and so mechanically and like in the spirit of how he liked to run games was a lot of like the mechanical inspiration. So at the same time as doing that, I've always loved certain the medieval Disney princess movies. I like that stuff a lot. And like a lot of the storybooks and the type of fantasy that I, you know, have always been interested in was a little bit different than like swords and sorcery adventures. It was a different, like, it was fairy tale fantasy or like humble fantasy or like low, like the stakes were different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting there watching Moana for the 100th time with my littlest kid, and just started drawing, you know, and just thinking about like, oh man, if Moana was in this game, what would she do, right? Like, what would be her skill set to get through an adventure? And I just started making tables, making like lists of tables, thinking about abilities, and just drawing like princesses with swords and stuff. So there was like, I was just doing all these things at once, and I was like, man, this would be a cool book. And I thought, at first I thought it was going to be like a short, like 20 page little thing. And then I just kept doing it. You know, I was like, this idea is good. Let's do it justice. And then just kept going with it. So It's kind of been what I've been doing for the past like 3 years now.
Yeah, it's a thing you've been working on for as long as I've known you. Like, yeah. I feel like very quickly after we met, you know, I heard about you working on Perils and Princes. I think it was a little bit before it was like finished and out.
Probably, yeah, because that's when I started talking about a lot online and meeting more people online too. So,
yeah, and I'll put it in the show notes. As always, all the links to everything will be in the show notes. Ryan's TikTok, for as long as it exists, is fantastic. Ryan goes over a ton of old, you know, sort of classic fantasy illustrations. Like, he talked about like low fantasy. I love humble fantasy. That's a great genre term. I don't know if that's what it's called, but I love that descriptor.
I'm gonna take credit for it.
Yeah, so. I love it. It's yeah. Great. I feel like it's very evocative. It kind of if you have a little bit of experience with it, you lock in exactly kind of what it means. And just we'll go through these illustration books that are all just fantastically gorgeous, and just great. One of the things I love about TikTok, one of the reasons I enjoy it as a platform, is just like, hey, here's a thing, and someone will just tell you about a thing, and you're like, oh, that's rad, that's cool. I didn't know about that thing, and now I know about that thing. Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, I try to bring a little bit of Reading Rainbow PBS energy when I try to TikTok. Like, there's enough people like yelling stuff. I'm just gonna like, here's, check it out.
It's a nice, yeah. Nice. It's a nice little like palate cleanser, you know, where you're just like, look at this cool art that this person. And the thing that I appreciate that you do is it's not a thing that like I'm yelling about any specific TikTok, but it's the thing that just happens online is people will talk about things and they'll lose context, they'll lose details or whatever, and I always feel like you take a lot of pain to be like, this is the person that did it, this is when it came out, here is the, you know, here is the book, here it is in context, here it is in conversation with the rest of the work that it's in, as opposed to just stills or whatever. And I feel like that does a lot to grab your attention as a viewer. You know, you're like, look at the book, and you're like, whoa, book, all right, what's going on here, we got this art.
Yeah.
And so I feel like you, I don't know if you do this intentionally, but I feel like it conveys a lot more meaning. And I feel like it's easier to connect with the illustrations that way when it's like, here it is in the book. Like, it's not just, you know, here's the art on a white background.
Yeah.
You know, here it is on the page.
I try not to show, like, sometimes I'll pull in like a screen cap, especially if it's an anime, if I'm like referencing an animation or something I don't have, but yeah, I started with my collection, and then as I qualified for the TikTok Creator Fund, you get like a couple bucks from doing that, and then I just buy more books.
See, I love that.
And then just do the next one.
That's a good idea. I like that idea. You're like, all right, listen, enough people like this one, then I'll do another one, and then...
Yeah. It's like, all right, $20. That's it. I can get a used book. It's great.
That's how, like, gaming people on YouTube do it. You know, if you ever see a YouTube video where someone's like opening $10,000 of Pokemon cards, it's because the last couple videos they made $10,000, and that video will make them $10,000, and they'll do it again.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, but for me, it's my vice is just smelly old books with that are out of print. I think I have to admit, I think I drove up the price of a couple books just by doing it.
Yeah,
like,
sadly,
there were ones where I was like, people commented, they're like, this book's like $100 everywhere online. I'm like, oh man, I got it like 6 months ago for $20, but then I talked about it, and if five people bought it, that's enough. Right. Yeah, so
it's a bummer that's how it works, you know. It's frustrating, especially like you said, especially with stuff that's out of print, that's like a little trickier to get a hold of, which,
yeah,
boy, I got a lot of thoughts about how that works, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're not here to talk about that. So, you talked about playing TTRPGs with your kids and all of this. Did you design Perils and Princesses to be a kid's game, or is it a game with, this was a conversation I was having on stream with some other people. Would you consider it a kid's game or a game with a theme that is kid appropriate?
I think Perils and Princesses is a good family game. Mm. Is how I usually describe it. I think the most fun, I played it with kids, I played it with adults. The most fun playtests I had were with a family. Mm-hmm. So it's not, Yeah, so I wouldn't say this is a kid's game. It, like, a lot of people sell it a lot. Like, I've heard bookstores say it sells pretty well when they put it by kids, which is great. It's very, it's totally kid-friendly. It's new player-friendly. It's family-friendly. I think that's part of the appeal is that it's not too kiddy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it kind of skirts the line, which is not, I don't know. It's not always the best marketing, right? Like, you want to like find one target audience and like really hone in on it. But it's a family game. It's like a good intro. A lot of people say it's a great first. They're a great first role playing game for people or to introduce to people, because the concepts are pretty simple. Mm-hmm. It's familiar. It's a familiar genre to a lot of kids and grown ups. And then I think that helps tie it together. And then just I think the tone, my catchphrase is gritty and pretty. I think it's got that fun. I think kids like scary stuff. I think grown-ups like it too. I think having it have that, it's whimsical, but at the same time, it has some of those serious, like old school fairy tale, you know, kids first body horror experiences that you get, it's an adventure game. So you're facing dangerous stuff. Mm-hmm. And you just have a different kind of toolbox than like the normal heroic fantasy toolbox. You've got, you know, your humble magic, and you've got like your sort of your inner strength. And that's kind of how the fantasy stories that I grew up really reading and watching, and like even like Disney princess movies, like it's not even like The Hobbit, right? Like Sam and Frodo don't succeed because they're the toughest. They just like they succeed because the power of friendship, basically.
Right.
So
right, yeah. And it's like you said, it was a discussion we were having, talking about like video games. We were talking about like kids games versus video games that are appropriate for kids. And yeah. And the big sort of decider that I came down on, like you said, like you said, it doesn't feel too kiddy. And that for me is always kind of the thing is, games that are designed for kids, adults wouldn't really play because they're not designed in a way to like captivate our attention in any way, you know? And there are things that are appropriate that would be appropriate for kids, but are not inherently designed for them. It's just like, oh yeah, like it works. It's, you know, it's fine. There's not anything questionable, overly questionable in it. Kind of on its face.
I think that's a good way to describe it. I think it's definitely kid friendly and family friendly. It's not really designed specifically, you know, with kids, because I tested with kids and families and adults. It makes me think, oh, what game did I play? We got the Switch game, the Princess Peach Showtime on Nintendo Switch, which I think is a kid's game.
Mm-hmm.
I got a kick out of it, but man, I think if I was just me or just my older kid playing it, we would have been like through it and done with it pretty quick. But man, my 4-year-old loves it. So like when you see bad reviews for it, I'm like, that's not for you, dude. That's like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. And that's the thing is sometimes you just have to, especially I feel like for kids stuff, I feel like it's just like you as an adult are just not going to find the same thing.
Right.
And I think it's a thing I've seen come up a lot the last few years for TTRPGs, is like people trying to make stuff explicitly for kids or more explicitly targeted to kids, more of the way of like kids also want to play games, you know, kids also you know, want things that aren't you know, I don't know what I would get for my child, you know, if I was a parent, if they were, you know, like I have a nephew who's 5 right now. And so you talked about like your son, like drawing all of these maps. He plays games with his dad where he just imagines that they're having like wars, like they're two countries basically having battles. And so he will just come up with infinite permutations of orcs doing things because they watch Lord of the Rings. And so it's like, yeah, like kids like imagining, kids like playing. Okay, cool. I'm shocked it took us this long for someone to be like, you know what we should do? So we should get a game for kids.
Right.
Just sell it to them.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think it's part of what is interesting about Perils and Princesses, I think, overall, is, like you said, it's been described as a family game. I like the idea of it being a family night game more than, oh, it's a kid's game that you give to the kids and, you know, they do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, I just have a couple playtests in particular pretty early on where it clicked, like, what the game was about, you know. That's something, I think, playtesting, like, yeah, you can test mechanically and make sure things make sense, but, like, sometimes the best discovery is just, like, oh, this is what the game is about. Like, this is what the game is. And it was at an expo, and Dad clearly was, like, he had, like, the denim jacket with, like, all the patches on it, and he was, like, clearly had gamed a lot, and it, you know. And then he had, like, two daughters and his wife, and they all sat down. I ran the game, you know, a short, like, half-hour version for them, and just seeing, like, the dad click with some of the old-school mechanics, and, like, the kids click with the abilities, and she's like, oh, shoot, like, I can be, like, I'm like Elsa, and then the mom is the one who, like, was the best at figuring out all the puzzles, right? Like, because she was, like, thinking out of the box the most, because she didn't have as much game experience, but she was another, you know, just, like, a new grown-up who, like, was bringing a fresh experience. So you had, like, it was, like, the perfect melt. Like, I was like, okay, this dynamic here where you've got everyone bringing their own kind of fun to the table, and it started to work really well. So that's, I don't know, that's the sweet spot for me. I think grown-ups like playing it, too, if they want. I mean, it's refreshing in terms of the scale of it and just the type of fantasy and the genre.
And I think, like the vibe check is very important, right? That was your vibe check test of, like, okay, how does this hit?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've been, you know, I did Pathfinder Society for a number of years, and while I was doing that, they introduced stuff targeted to kids, and we did a little bit of that. And number one, I need people to remember, kids are wild. Kids are wild. A lot of people like to act like kids, like, don't know anything and never say anything bad, and Owen would never talk about blood or guts or nothing like that. No, like you said, kids love horror. Kids get weird with it. Again, they don't need to watch a scary movie to know about a horrible thing. They'll think about a horrible thing. It's fine. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
The amount my wife ran kids track for some kids once. It was a very simple adventure. It was like, hey, you know, there's some goblins. Go, you know, kill the goblins. Yeah, hey, guess what? It's still Pathfinder. And then come back. You know, and it was, you know, it was like a basic, it was super basic mechanics. And it was just like, hey, you know, have, you know, something to do to get kids interested. I remember her telling me all of the stories. They're like the kids wanted to put the goblins in a sack and carry them around and bring them back and be like, look, we did. They were like, they wanted to cut off the ears. And I was like, okay, that's kids, oh, man.
Yeah. I think you gotta give them credit. you gotta meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll surprise you if you,
Yeah. I think it's a thing I hear a lot about from parents talking about kids and, like, what they enjoy about kids media. It, like, this is the big thing that people bring up about Bluey, right? Is, like, Bluey doesn't talk down to kids. Bluey doesn't talk to kids like they're, you know, stupid little babies. It talks to them only slightly simpler than it talks to the adults. You know, they just don't use specific words. They don't phrase things in big, long sentences. They get to the point, they say it, and then there's what it is. And so it's always interesting to see stuff that kids gravitate to. And I imagine as a parent, that's just like a constant thing of,
oh yeah,
what do we get the kids? What do the kids do? What can the kid, you know?
And it's always changing as they're growing. So yeah. And I mean, my like parenting thing is I never want to shut them down if they're interested in something, you know, unless it's harmful, right?
Sure. Like, they want to play in traffic. You're like, well, he wants what he wants.
No. Yeah. No, it was like my daughter last night, she saw on Roku there was like an ad for the Super Bowl, and we don't watch football. But she was like, what's that all about? And I was like, explain, like, hey, you know, this is a football game and everyone you know, a lot of people watch it and some people like the game and some people just like hanging out and eating snacks and some people like cheering. And she's like, okay, let's do it.
Let's watch this. I was like, okay, I want to watch. I love the response. Let's do it.
Like, yeah, that's great. Like, are we going to watch football now? I was like, well, I wasn't planning on it. But I got some chicken wings and looking at some chicken wings for and watch this game for 10 minutes. And she was like, I'm cheering for this team. Like, she just likes the drama. She likes drama. She likes she likes the energy about it. I was like, yeah, why not? All right.
I love that. That's so, I just love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My nephew is almost that old. I'm very excited for him to be, you know, just old enough where like he sees the thing and he's like, what's that? I mean, he's that now, but he doesn't, as far as last hung out, he's not at the point where he's like, what's that? And then listens for a response.
Right.
He sees what's that and then just goes and engage with it and figures it out on his own. And it's like, okay, that's fine sometimes, but also, he's a good kid. I love him. Enough about kids. Cause kids, listen, you're not kickstarting kids.
No,
don't kickstart a child.
Don't do that.
You'll get a visit from somebody.
There's better ways.
So
there's better ways to get children.
There's better. No, man. So Perils and Princesses, right? So everybody plays a princess. How to phrase a sentence is always the fun. Always the fun of this is I take the idea of put it into words, you know, the way people talk. What was your process for sort of coming up with, I guess in a way to describe so many systems, like the power fantasy of a princess adventurer, you know?
Yeah.
Princesses have gifts and abilities and, you know, the stats and all that. Like how did you sort of set out to say, like, here's what a princess who has a sword and adventures across the countryside for, you know, to make it short, is going to look like?
Yeah, I think if it, a lot of it came from, right, I went to the source material for the genre, and I was like, taking, what are magical things, what are these magical moments that happen, and like, let's just list them and then put them into categories, because Rapunzel in the Disney movie Tangled, she does a few things. She's really acrobatic. She has all these like talents because she spends all this time in her castle. So she's like, can paint and draw and sculpt and do pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. But like her main like magical thing is like her hair can heal, right? And so like I was just thinking about how many moments, like this idea of like a healer is like a common like fantasy role-playing thing, but it's also like a common in like this like other fairy tale genre of something that heals. So like I was trying to think of like, okay, I'll let's put, bring like the little bits of healing and put those in like a category, and then just think about other things like what are these abilities that might not seem, they're not like power fantasy abilities, but they're like feel something that in the right context feels incredibly magical. Mm-hmm. So the moment in the fact that Snow White can sing a song and then all the woodland animals from the forest come and help her finish this task, that is cute and cool. Mm-hmm. But what if that helped you save your life, you know? What if your ability to like call upon the woodland creatures, that is incredibly like, in, you know, in Dungeons and Dragons, that's like a level 2 spell or whatever to summon like whatever, but in the right context, that is an incredible magical feat and is really exciting and fun. So it's just like finding those like fictional moments and then taking them out of like recontextualizing them and category, you know, trying to put them in different categories where this makes sense for like one thematic gift that you could go, like a path you could go down.
Yeah, it makes sense because it's like, okay, here's how Snow White uses it when she's just, you know, living with some dwarves doing the laundry. How might she utilize that if, you know, she had to go, you know, do a quest, like stop a dragon or whatever, you know? That's not a thing that you would just rest on your laurels and be like, well, I guess I just call woodland creatures to help with laundry. You know, you'd be like, well, can they lift stuff? Can they move stuff? Can we... So, yeah.
I like that. And then it kind of brings it like... I don't know. And it kind of like is in the spirit of that kind of open-ended problem-solving style of play is like, let's... And that's another thing, to bring it back to kids, is I think kids, because they're not as familiar with media, sometimes games designed for kids almost assume that they are, mm-hmm. and when they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, they don't, like... If it's too open-ended and like, oh, this kid, you can do anything. Like, what's good for the story? What story do you want to tell? Kids might not be that media literate to know, like, the rise and fall of that. But kids can be very practical and literal and imaginative with... They're very creative in coming up with solutions with what they have in front of them. So I think that, like, that kind of concrete thing sets them up better where it's like, you can summon... You can bring... You roll the dice and see how many animals from the forest come to help you. And I feel like that is like a good thing for a kid to like jump off from or anybody, you know, anybody, but like that kind of like, let's take this ability and what can you do with this? Like very like, you know, like rather than relying on them to come up with a dramatic moment.
Right. Instead of just saying like you have nature magic and allowing them to guess at what that means, just give them something slightly more concrete and slightly more limited, but more focused, and say, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a fun idea to think of, like watching all of those old Disney movies. I think people discount, like you mentioning that, like made me sort of think through, like people discount like how much magic is in those movies in a way that isn't really magic in the way. You know, you might think of if someone's like name a you know movie that has someone doing magic in it. I doubt anybody would be like, oh yeah, Cinderella. You know,
yeah.
Like but, maybe that's the most overt magic, but even then, the magic is just like nice dress.
Yeah, exactly.
But and think of how crazy cool that magic is. Like she literally is like, yeah, those rats, boom, those are dudes. That pumpkin, boom, that's a carriage. Like,
yeah, yeah, you're exactly right, and that's the. That kind of thinking is definitely what got me excited about writing the whole game because, and then when you see those moments come, like once you start playing with it and you have all these characters with these different moments pulled from that kind of fiction working together, man, it's a fun game to play, especially when, you know, everything's interacting with each other. I think, yeah, Disney movies for sure. A lot of storybooks with those kind of, yeah, you know, even like Lord of the Rings magic is a little bit more like fairy tale magic than say like D&D spellcasting stuff, you know. Gandalf just being there makes everybody feel better. You know, he's just there and now everyone feels a little bit like more energized or whatever. It's like it's less tangible or more subtle.
Yeah, it's less, I'm going to cast this magic spell and summon this fireball. I think a lot of people, it's a thing, we just watched Lord of the Rings. My wife and I have a yearly thing we do called Hobbitmas, where we'll watch the Lord of the Rings extended. It has to be the extended because we're, you know, people of culture. and we will just plan a day of, you know, tasty food and just, you know, just have a nice cozy day, nice relaxing day. And it's something I realized this most recent rewatch. A lot of moments newly stuck out to me. And a number of them are the moments of Gandalf. I remember like there's a big thread or whatever a long time ago that's like, here's like all of the magic that Gandalf does and like, you know, describes what he does in like D&D terms, right? It's something like Gandalf's a level 5 wizard to show that like a lot of the stuff that he does is more intelligent than like powerful. And like the bit at the end with the Battle of Rohan where he's like, yeah, look to me on the third day. And he comes down the mountain and, you know, it's like, oh, man, he has this big blinding spell. It's like, no, dog, it's the sun. Like he's riding in front of the sunrise and is probably like magically amplifying it. Right. It feels like a lot of the magic that Gandalf does is take what is existing and amplify it or enhance it or suppress it. Right. Hide it. But it's a lot less the magic I think a lot of people think of with D&D, where it's like he's not going to be like, yeah, I made a magic chair, or here's a big fireball, or you know, lightning, or whatever. And a lot of, like you said, a lot of the magic in Lord of the Rings is more subtle, more it exists, you know, like so much of that magic surrounding the elves is just like, yeah, it's just magic, dog. Like the rope, like, yeah, it unties itself. Why? Because it'd be cool. It'd be nice if like, oh yeah, my rope. Cool. Thanks. Got my rope back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. And I think that was that to me, that kind of fantasy is what I grew up thinking of as fantasy. And that's there. It was a genre kind of sweet spot that I really, really wanted to explore. And it was kind of, I realized that was like the kind of game those kind of moments was what I was looking for when I like looking for different kind of D&D style adventures to play or characters to play. And I was like, maybe I should just make my own game. If it's just me that plays it, that will be cool.
I think that's
cool that there's more people.
I think that's fun though, is to just like, I'm going to make this for me. And then if other people think it's cool, cool.
Yeah.
I like that. We've talked a lot. I've been talking with a lot of people talking about Zine Month stuff. And I think for any creative thing, that's the most important part. When I was talking with Rowan, I think it was Rowan. Oh, I'm not sure now. Somebody I was talking with, sorry, was like, yeah, like any creative endeavor, like you need to figure out what you want from it and then go for that. And then that's how you'll find fulfillment in it. And I think for a lot of creative endeavors like this, you know, pulling back to Zine Month, is it's like, I want to have made a thing. I want to make a game and have it exist. And whether or not I do more or whether other people like it, it's a thing I've been thinking a lot about the creative process, like doing this podcast. Like this is the first, like what I would call creative project I've really taken on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been interesting all of the ways, like I think about it all the time. And I think about like, how do I make it interesting? How do I make it engaging? How do I phrase engaging questions and all of this? And I imagine it's very, very similar when you're writing a game. Like, how do I make, you know, engaging prompts, engaging abilities? How do I make a cool adventure? How do I make, you know, powers or whatever seem interesting, that, you know, you don't want to write a dud.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thrill of it, right? Especially if it's something you can't stop thinking about. I love that feeling sometimes where it's just like, I'm so hyped about this thing that I'm working on and I can't stop thinking about it. That's gold. I love that feeling. Even though you lose sleep, you're just like, it gives you, I always say, it gives your brain a nice place to rest. You know, that isn't, you know, it could go right to dread about the whole world. But if you've got like a creative endeavor just to let your brain, you know, roll around in, that's the good stuff. And then the important thing, I mean, you got to make something exist first, make it exist first, and then make it good sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A thing everybody I've talked to has mentioned is just like, Riley, my last interview was really like specific about it. It was just like, get it done. You can go back to it, you know, just make it exist, make it be there, make it be done.
Yeah.
And you know, it's why I think, you know, I've said this before, Zine Month is great. This sort of idea of like intentionally limit yourself. Don't let it get too big. Don't let it be this big production. Boom, yeah. Do this, be done. And then, you know, move on in the sense of it has been completed. And you can, you know, you can wake up the next day and you don't have to think about it. You don't have to work on it because it's done.
Yeah. And I mean, you don't get, and even if your goal is to get good, you don't get better by making one perfect thing. You get better by iterating things. It was some of the best advice I ever got in art school. Just keep making shit. Are you making stuff? Like, are you making stuff? What are you making? Just keep making stuff. Like, what are you doing? Are you making something? Well, you should be making, like, keep making something. Doesn't matter what. Just, or if it's good.
And I think that's everything. Like, any person that you see on social media that you like, respect what they like. When you're like, I like what this person does for any reason, whatever it is, for any reason, it's probably because that person has made 100 bad things or things that are well worse than that. But it's like, they did it and they were like, well, that sucked. And then they made another one. You know, they either learned from it or were just like, well, you know, just this one was bad in the ways that it happens sometimes. This one was bad. On to the next one.
Yeah.
And I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was like, after playing Pearls and Princesses for like 2 years, I've got a whole long list of stuff I want to change on it. But now I can't. I realize I can't just update things piecemeal just because there's too many people that play it now.
Mm.
Like, I've got to sort of wait for, like, you know what I mean? I don't want the game to change every time I have a whim.
Right.
So I just have like a long list of like, oh, this, you know, this gift isn't as interesting as it could be, or this, you know, this way of describing this is too complicated, or I should, you know, give a little bit more advice in this area. You know, like, I've got like lots of things like that floating around, but I want it to keep growing, but yeah, the danger is I don't want to, it's not like a video game patch I can just slide in. It's like, I've got to update all these PDFs and everyone's going to re-download it and refigure out what, you know, the new thing. So,
right.
I did one update.
I wish, here's just an advice. I'll speak out to the universe. I wish when they updated TTRPGs, they did patch notes like they do for video games.
Yeah,
just a little one page document that made it clear, here are the things that are different, because I don't mind like the original document being updated, but I also would really just like here are the things we changed. Here you go.
I did that on, I'm in my devlog on itch. I did list everything that changed when I updated it. So
I love that. I really appreciate being able to look at it and being like, okay, so this change. Okay, I don't care about that. Okay, that's not.
Well, everyone was right. Everyone was like really worried. I'm like, literally, that nothing in the rules changed. I clarified some wording and fixed some like dumb typos. Like,
okay. I think it's exciting to, Itch is amazing. I feel like every interview I'm just going to talk about how Itch is amazing. Itch is an amazing website, and I feel like it has so many features that people, when people engage with them and utilize them in either the way they were intended or the new, or a new way, is very exciting. And I love seeing, like you said, like the devlog, like I love seeing updates and just even little things that are just like, hey, like, you know, da 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 da, like, oh my, you know, I ran my game here. You know, like I love seeing people use those as almost like a mini blog to be like, oh yeah, you want to keep up with the game? Like, here's this. It's going to be on this AP. It's going to, you know, and it's fun to see the community aspects of it be used in that way. And it feels much more like a living place than a lot
it's
of other
like the best social media site.
Right. Because you just look at it and you go, oh yeah, that's cool. And that's it. I don't have to, I could comment, but I can just be like, that's it. I'm done. Goodbye.
On the back end, it's pretty darn easy to use as a creator, and it's, I mean, I sold a good amount for me. I was impressed by the amount of downloads I had, and I give away a ton free too. And that's the other thing with community copies. If someone buys like pays full price, I throw another community copy out. Just like,
I love seeing people come up with like their silly little laws for community copies. Like I love people just like, yeah, if you, like you said, if you pay full price, oh, if you, you know, pay a little bit more, if you do this, people will be like, yeah, you know, people, there's somebody, I forget who it is. They have a Patreon that funds the stuff. And then like every time there's like a new number on Patreon, they add some community copies or something. And it's always fun to see people's little rituals.
It's a cool little game, a little game you can play. And like, the thing is, I want to offer community copies. I also like the money I make from Itch is a big deal to me. Mm-hmm. So like, I can't put these games out for free. I want, like, if they're something I want to keep doing as like my way of living, which I'm trying to like keep, you know, be more of a game creator, and it lets me do my art and lets me live and all these things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I want, you know, I love giving games to the community, especially if people can't afford it, you know. So yeah, just like those little games you can play where it's like, yeah, that way when you buy the game, you're buying it for a stranger. Mm-hmm. And you're buying it from me, and then I can work on the next thing and keep supporting this game or another game.
There's just so many fun little features built into Twitch. I was talking with Andy at Pandian about like, there's so much you can do with Itch. There's so much you can change, there's so much you can add and tweak and adapt. And it's just felt so, it's so, and for me especially, for me at least, I should say, it's so much more engaging than, you know, I don't want to say more engaging than drive through, but like, honestly, it is like, if, you know, I'm not going to say anything I wouldn't say if they asked me directly, right? I feel more engaged to interact with someone's itch page than I do their drive through page.
It doesn't, they have a better, I mean, I think they have more customization options for a creator page. Mm-hmm. And they have, and yeah, it's a more of a community place. I think drive through is very much a storefront, mm-hmm. whereas itch has way more community to it, I think, at least that, from what I've engaged mm-hmm. with.
It feels a lot more like there's a lot more going on. There's a lot more connection. It feels like, yeah. I really love when people do when people someone will make a game. My favorite thing that I see people do is they'll make a game and then they'll have like a little shelf at the bottom that's like, here's other stuff for my game, and it's from a bunch of other people, you know. And I love the fact that you can highlight that in that way, and you can control how those elements look and all of this. Like, it always makes me more excited to explore someone's, like, not even just their product page, like, go and see what else have they done? What's this? What's that? Oh, this was in a game jam? What's in this game jam?
Yeah, no, you can poke around and download all kinds of games you might never have time to play, but boy, it's... you mentioned Andy. His itch page, I was just on it today. It looks great. Mine is, like, bare bones. Mine is, like, stark white. Here's my games. I haven't really, like, taken the time to graphic design it
well, but I think that's the fun of it, right? Is even a stock page or a page with just a couple tweaks, the thing I like about itch is the UI kind of gets out of your way. Yeah. You know, and you know, I don't want to slag drive through the whole time, but there's just a lot more space to be doing stuff. You know, you can have a little image, you can embed videos. That's another thing I love seeing people do, is if it's been on an AP or if somebody's talking about it, you can embed little videos.
Yeah.
It's just so much more of a media rich page in a way that's like, I'm looking at a page to sell me a product, but I'm engaged with it in such a specific way, in a way that like, I haven't seen a lot of other places do, you know, short of like,
yeah,
Steam.
It lets you build a nice storefront and or a nice experience if you want it to be that. And it makes it easy to do that. Mm-hmm. It makes it easy for me to like, here's my games. Let me throw other games I think are inspiring in this one. Let me throw another category. Like, here's community. Here's stuff people have made for Perils and Princesses. Here's stuff made by collaborators. Like, here's some stuff with, you know, here's Sean's stuff, here's Destiny's stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a cool platform. And I think between that and then like TikTok really set me up to like, I don't know, be pretty successful in getting this game out to people. So I definitely have the TikTok folks and then an itch to thank, as well as Discord too now. Mm-hmm. That was kind of, it's been a cool place to keep in touch with all the people that like the Perils and Princesses Discord has like 300 people on it, and they're super stoked for any new thing I post. They're always, it's always fun to see what people do with the thing you made. Mm-hmm. And like see their art of their OCs and see their campaigns and answer their questions. And yeah, I mean, that's like, that's the most fun thing.
How many, so you mentioned you have all these changes. How many of those changes have come up because of, you know, something that somebody brought you where they're like, hey, such and such and such. And you're like, you know, I never thought about that. And not in a bad way, like a weird, like power gamey way, but in a way that you're just like, oh yeah, I never considered those two things together.
Oh yeah. I mean, I would say a lot of it's just from me playing so much more, myself playing so much more over the years. But there's no way, that's another argument for putting something out there, is like, you're never going to play test as much as people are going to actually play it after it's done. So there's so much more information, so many more, I mean, a lot of it was people noticing things or like being really confused. You know, some of it was stuff that like, you're so close to it, you don't realize that something's confusing the way you've written it. Even Yeah, little things like that. And then like people getting hung, yeah, where people are getting stuck and where they keep asking questions. And you're like, oh man, this has come up a lot. Mm-hmm. This is something to clarify, or like, this seems, you know, people, where, what's something people are super stoked on? Can we do more of that? You know?
That's a thing I think a lot about, like you say about playtesting. There's a video game expansion that came out a few years ago, and it was, you know, highly anticipated, sold a bunch of copies. It'd been, you know, in production for a couple years. And the first week of its release, because people were talking about, like, you know, they had been finding a bunch of bugs and doing a bunch of fixes and stuff. And people were like, how can you not find all these bugs? And they said that the first week it had come out, it had been played for 1 million hours. Like across all people, yeah. Like it had been played for 1 million hours. It's like, you literally can't playtest something that much. Like it's unfeasible. It is unrealistic. And you know, it is a, when the rubber meets the road situation. Like, we can only find out that this happened because 5 people did it and said, hey, do you know that this happens? It's like, oh shoot. Nope. Okay, cool. We'll fix that.
No, we didn't know that because, yeah, it would be it's not going to be perfect, but done is better. And then, you know, people are going to engage with it. And especially with a role-playing game too, right? Like, there are so many variables that you can't really even test. There is who's running the game, what's the adventure they're running, who's at the table, what are, like, it is an open-ended thing. So the best thing you can do is set someone up for, you know, give them the tools to make the game their own anyway. Like, that's the fun of it, is that is that you can't cover every situation. Some systems, you know, some systems try to cover more situations and are a little more heavy in rules, but not, you know, not this style of game where you're just like, hey, this is the basics. Try to make this apply to your situation. If not, you know, you're gonna have to make a ruling, and that's kind of the fun of it.
I do like games. I'm finding myself more enamored with games that are like, yeah, here are the rules, and then if something comes up, I don't know, you'll figure it out. I believe in you. You know, I love games that end with like a, you got it, sport. Like, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, and I try to give that, you know, I try to give that kind of guidance for this, you know. There's like basically one rule, right? Like, if there's a risk of failure, you have to roll one of these 3 stats, and there's like, this is how magic works, and this is how, you know, there's like this other mechanic called heart dice that can, you kind of give of yourself to help other people with their rolls. And so there's like kind of like 3 rules in the game. And just keep rolling with, like, it's like, use that and apply that the best you can, you know. Stuff's gonna come up that, yeah, it's open-ended. But yeah, the other advice I said is, you don't have to have all the answers as, you know, as the game master, right? Like, if you get stuck, take a break, figure it out, ask the table what they think, come to a consensus together. You don't have to be, you know, you're still playing a game with your friends, like, figure it out.
Yeah,
I used to do that all the time as kids, like, not even with role-playing games. You play a game, and they're like, okay, wait, new rule. Wait, time out. New rule, you can't go past
the tree. No, you can't shoot me with the laser, because I have a shield. And you're like, no, but you can't have a shield. You got to recharge it. It's got to recharge. You can't just have infinite shield.
Yeah, see, exactly. It's that energy.
Yeah.
You can still do that as a grown-up or with your family. Like, yeah.
Yeah, people, there's so many like small bits of TTRPG advice that I've read or been told that I feel like it's that fun thing of like, I don't feel like I've had a unique experience, but I feel like I've just like latched onto these like simple idioms more than like, I'm going to follow the exact rules in the book. It's like, I'm going to stick to these vibes. And then any game that I run, we're just going to transpose these vibes. And that's served me pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, role-playing games are a game of vibes. It's a vibe-based game.
People forget like, it and will get so hung up on stuff that I'm just like, y'all, you gotta relax. You're playing a game, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you know, if he wanted to, you know, use the item that way. Who cares? It's fine.
Yeah.
Move forward. one of the best bits of advice I've always read. I want to say it was Vincent Baker, but I could be wrong. I'll try to find it for the show notes. Say yes or roll dice.
Yeah,
and I think that is such a small great piece of advice for any role playing game, because it's either like, okay, does this thing happen? It's like, okay, yes, yeah, it happens, or you engage with a mechanic system.
Yeah,
whatever that looks like.
In the situation where you would have to say no, it's usually because they don't have enough information.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if they're like, can I climb this? And you're like, no, it's really slippery.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's, no, you can't climb this. It's way, way too high. Because it's played under magic. Like, you as the GM, you're the only access point they have. So, I really don't like games that have... Or I don't like how a lot of games do like perception.
Mm.
Or I don't know. It's so tricky to me, because I'm like, well, how can they actually play the game? They're just rolling to see how much of the game they have access to. Whereas it's like, no, usually if you ask a question, or if usually you're at a point where someone, you say, no, you can't do this, it's because they need more info, or they need more context. And then they can realize a different way to come at something. And that's when you get to say yes or roll dice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this was well before like the sort of OSR movement and kind of shifting with the way a lot of that language is used. And I think I think the OSR like lends a lot to that ethos. Like you said, like, can I climb this? It's like, okay, well, you can, but here are some things you might want to know before you attempt this. It's very slippery. You don't have any climbing gear. It's really high. You might fall. Those are the information points. Do you still want to climb it?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to stop you. Now you have all the information that maybe wasn't important 5 seconds ago before we thought about climbing this.
Right. Right.
And yeah, it's to segue very nicely into a thing I wanted to talk about anyway. You do a fantastic thing in Perils and Princesses that I wish more games did, but in a way that, it is more applicable for some games. You have a lot of like inspiration. You have a whole page devoted to like inspirational works of like, hey, here's the games that inspired this. And you know, if you want more GM advice, if you want more kind of the GM ideas that I had this. And then you have, hey, if you want more of the vibes of fairy tales that I had when I was writing this. And I love, shocker, I'm making a podcast about it. I love when people put the effort into the work to say, here are the things that I was drawing from. Here are the things that I had in mind when, you know, I wrote such and such and such. And I just love people taking the time to acknowledge their inspirations, because I'm the sort of person that's like, oh, here's more, you know, here's more stuff like this. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Let me, what's up? What's going on over here? How do I feel? You know, how do I feel about this? Is this interesting? And especially for a game like this, which is like a very specific genre, you know, it's not just fantasy. Like we talked about, it's, you know, humble fantasy, low fantasy. You're like, okay, well, I'm not, what is this? How am I supposed to be thinking of this? Okay, cool. Great. Here's a list of books this long.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to be clear that like, that this is like a fertile ground for imagining more stuff, and isn't just like, it's not just a goof, right? Like I feel like, you know, that's something you run into when you make something that's like on purpose, like pretty cute. I made a big pink book about princesses, but I like, this is earnest, right? Like, mm-hmm. This is a fertile ground for like imagination and stories. And there's a long history of this kind of, you know, this is like this is a way of telling stories, and a way of like imagining, and a way of going on adventures. That's like, there's enough meat on these bones here, right? And if you're more interested in it, I will talk your ear off about it. here's a list of books, you know.
Yeah, it's just always, it's always nice to see. I think like people talk about Appendix N a lot, and I think part of the reason Appendix N gets as much like kudos as it does is because it's one of the few examples of that sort of thing, of, you know, someone pretty clearly being like, here are the inspirations that we had when we wrote this. I think you could say a lot about Appendix N and how they've kind of moved away from that, but that's another podcast. but it's for me, it's always an acknowledgement of like the idea that like no idea exists in a vacuum. You know, nothing is new under the sun. Everything is, you know, everything is a new coat of paint on something. And it recognizes of, you know, it recognizes the fact of this work is in conversation with other things. This work is a lineage of works. And so I always appreciate just it. And like I said, it's never that I'm reading a game and it feels like someone is doing that intentionally. It's just always a nice positive when I do see it, you know, when it's like, oh yeah, you know, this person's calling out more stuff that's like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, yeah. And even like the games I referenced too, right? Like yeah, this is in conversation with that whole world. It's in conversation with like tons of fantasy. It's not, I don't want to pretend that I'm coming up with like brand new things other than like mostly just recontextualizing things, mm-hmm. and, you know, putting out some artwork that is how I imagine this stuff coming together, you know? But yeah, I wanted to give credit where credit's due for a lot of mechanics that I just, you know, reskinned and put together in different ways that made sense for the game I wanted to play.
And I think it's a fantastic like design thing. It's one of the things I love about TTRPGs is like, oh, here's my game. It's pretty much this, but it's, you know, I also use, oh, it's pretty much Blades in the Dark, but I made a new faction system and, you know, it's, yeah. You know, and when you're clear about that, you know, it's, I always enjoy like, okay, so it's Blades. So I've got, okay, cool. I know what I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
And just, I think a lot about like the massive communities that have formed around Morkborg and Mothership and those sorts of games. And the joy of seeing new people come up with new stuff, people, you know, like you said, recontextualizing stuff, people spinning stuff in new ways, but all working with the same building blocks of like, oh, here, look what I made. Look what I made. Look what I made.
Yeah.
It's just such a rich, like it's like fertile ground, like to just restate what you said, like there's so much going on. It's just cool to see as a person who really just appreciates creative endeavor. It's like, oh wow, I wouldn't have thought of this.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's no, I mean, that was a big point. Like there's having like played games in like high school and then not played games for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a long time of me not playing games where a lot of cool stuff was happening. Mm-hmm. And then getting back into them, I was like, this was here this whole time. Like there was so many cool new ways of thinking about games that kind of matched how I wanted to be playing anyway. Yeah. Hugely inspired by a lot of those. So
I love the idea of like playing games like a little bit, like, you know, playing TTRPGs a little bit, and then just like, and then 15 years passed and, oh, I'm gonna get into it again, and then just like, the hell happened while I was gone. What did y'all get up to?
Basically. And like, I mean, it's funny, I do how I played in like high school was very homebrewed and simplified anyway. Like that's mm-hmm. how I like learned how to play, was like friend's older brother running game for us, and like, here's a blank piece of paper, this is your character sheet, write down these, you know, roll a dice, write these numbers, what are your abilities, here's like, yeah, like pick a couple abilities and then if you level up you can pick a new one. And I'm like, oh, that's just how this game works.
Yeah, okay, cool.
That's how the game I'm gonna make is gonna be like anyway. Like he's gonna phone it in for his little brother and his little brother's friends, but ended up doing us a service because I like that idea of it.
That's great. I like the idea of make this character if you level up.
Yeah.
Like if it, listen, don't get too excited. If it happens, we'll worry about it.
if we play this long enough before, yeah.
So I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the illustrations in this, particularly because you did the whole thing. You did the whole kit, you know, you did game design, illustrations, all that. So I feel like I would definitely be missing a beat if we didn't talk about that. And I imagine I came up with a smarter way of saying, Ryan, how do you draw? as a person, I've famously said, like, I'm bad at drawing. It's very difficult for me to go from an image in my head to an image on paper or whatever, you know what I mean? Transmitting that image to a new medium is very tricky for me. I can't think of a better way to frame this than like, right, how draw, how do draw? Pencil, how draw? Like,
man, that's a huge, that is,
I know, right? It's like, it's not helpful as a question, like, Ryan, how do you draw? Like, what do you mean,
how do I draw? How do you breathe?
I got an Apple pencil, that's how do I draw, next question.
How do you see? I've been drawing forever, right? Like, since I've always been drawing, mm-hmm. and I went to school for drawing, and so that helps a lot.
Saying practice, you went to school, like, for drawing feels like it's minimizing effort that you put into at school.
No, but yeah, I mean, that's so, yeah, and a lot of it is looking at drawings, a lot of it is looking at the world, and then getting more and more confident with the fact that, you know, you go through long phases being mad at your drawings because they don't look like someone else's drawings. Mm. You know, and I still, once in a while, it's like anytime you create something, you'll see someone else's art and be like, God damn it, that's so good. It makes me mad.
Why wasn't mine that? Mine could have been that.
Why is it? And then you get in the danger of like, okay, I'm like going to look up like reference images. I want to look at a bunch of different trees or whatever on Pinterest. And then you start looking and you're like, God, these are all so good. You're like, I accidentally looked at everybody's favorite drawing of a tree at once. Oh, you're like, no. Why isn't my art everything? Why right, isn't my art the same as every great tree?
And you're like, why even draw this tree?
Yeah.
Why? There's already so many trees.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, so Perils and Princesses, I kind of tried to really come up with a distinct style for it. That was like stuff I was doing, but I really wanted to play up certain things. I wanted it to look kind of one of the inspiration points for it was I do collect a lot of old books, and a lot of old books have black and white illustrations, especially if they're fairy tale books. Kids get a hold of them and then they color in the book they shouldn't be coloring in, and right. They have like, there's like crayon or marker in a old black and white illustration, and I really was in this phase where I wanted to draw a lot looser than I had been. I wanted to like embrace this like scribbliness to it. So that's like where a lot of those marks came from. This idea of these fairy tale books that have kind of layers of history on them. They've got like a very kind of classical composition, but then have like a scribbly layer and like notebook doodles and some collagey kind of elements. And then like the scribble texture kind of has a folk art feel to it. Looks a little bit like woven. So I just really like have been leaning in the past few years doing art is like to this, trying to create that atmosphere and that like layered look of kind of scribbles and texture on top of like what might be a more maybe like classical composition or like a classical way of like posing figures in space, and then just like letting the texture give you that kind of fun, add a little bit of fun to it, add a little bit of whimsy to it, add a little bit of like interactivity, because that's the other thing is like role-playing games have this, there's the book, there's the rules in the book is the game, and then what you bring to life is also, you know, even more so the game. So that's kind of what happens through the artwork, where you've got like kind of different layers of making marks.
Yeah, and you answered the question I was going to ask, which is like, did you adopt a specific style for this? And, you know, sounds like you said yes, and you said so many things.
Yeah. I mean, style is such a weird thing. Like, I have my style. I because it's my hand, and mm-hmm. I kind of just, you end up pushing in different, finding different zones within your style and sort of pushing against that boundary sometimes, or sometimes just sitting right in the middle. It's a nebulous kind of thing.
And this is the third Perils and Princess like thing, right?
Yeah. There was Perils and Princesses, the core book, last year. So I could focus more on drawing and bring some other people in on this. Last year I did Sweet Revenge, which is a whole campaign. So
that's what I was thinking of earlier.
That's what you were thinking.
That's what I was thinking of earlier.
That just fulfilled. That was last year's big project. It's an awesome campaign about a witch who's cursed this village to everyone starting to turn into candy.
That's great.
Yeah, it's written by Destiny Howell. She is fantastic. She built an amazingly fun world with these super cool characters. That was last year's project. So I did bring someone in to help write, so I could focus on the drawing and the art and the marketing and just kind of creative direct the whole thing and put it together. It turned out great. I love it. I could probably play the whole campaign with zero prep now because I've read it so many times. But yeah.
Do you find, with like the illustrations for this, do you find you're trying to do new things with the drawings? Like you're like, oh, you know, I didn't depict a lot of, probably not the best example, but like I didn't depict a lot of climbing. So let's try to get some pictures of climbing. Are you kind of pushing in that specific of a way, or are you just letting the drawings come out and then you sort of choose what fits?
Yeah, no, I think I was just thinking about this today, actually. So for instance, with Perils and Princesses and then to some extent Sweet Revenge, like Perils and Princesses is very much like on the player, like player character archetypes, right? So there was very much focus on just like these individual, like what is a princess in this game? So there's a lot more like just singular images of characters or monsters or items, right? Like it's just all these building blocks. Whereas I think I'm moving towards with the Night Market is so much about atmosphere and mood and a setting. I've been like moving away from just singular items and trying to fill out, like focusing on the lighting and the space and the like, like the vibes of a place has been, you know, kind of where it's going, mm-hmm. and been like, it's been a challenge to like where I've been trying to challenge myself is to really encapsulate like the whole like vibe of a space rather than just like these kind of like more vignetted moments.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm at with the Night Market. So I think it's going to be less illustrations, but maybe bigger, more detailed ones that are like more all encompassing.
Well, that makes sense, right? For the core book, you probably have a number of illustrations that are representative of specific things. Like each of the gifts have one, and then you're like, you know, here's an example of this, and here's an example of this to sort of fit the. And it, you don't need that as much for an adventure as you do, you know, the core book where you're trying to evoke specific stuff. You know, an adventure, you're like, I'm portraying this thing, like specific this specific right. event or this specific place. Are you finding you're doing like you said, like are you doing fewer pieces but more complicated pieces?
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at now. I also when I did Perils and Princesses, I did it all how you're not supposed to, which is I did it the least efficient way possible because that's where like that was how I was creating the art and the words in tandem. This was they were you know linked completely. Mm-hmm. Like the layout, the art, like the game as one thing developed all at the same time. So I was doing art and then trying to like figure out what the, you know, like an idea for an image would come to my mind, and I would do a little sketch and then I'd put that in the layout and then think about what, you know, where that would fit into character creation. Like, it was all a jumble that you could you could kind of only do that as a singular creator.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not efficient. And so I did it and I redid it 100 times because I would come up with a new drawing, and then, you know, and then I had lots of drawings that didn't fit into the game. And then I had rules that needed drawings and like gifts that need, you know. So I think now that my process is more honed in, I kind of have like a template for how I do the layout. I've got my, you know, more collaborators on board. I can like really focus in and be like, okay, I'm going to do these 10 illustrations. What am I going to do with this illustration that's going to be do all the things I need it to do in the book, where it's like sets a tone, it gives you a break in pacing, it's going to like explain something that is hard to explain without a visual. Like, they all like have more specific roles rather than kind of like doing them all at once.
I love the idea of you like, this page is about character creation, and then you draw a thing and you're like, okay, now how does that help?
Yeah. 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 That's exactly it.
Yeah. that does sound like the most like just brain reactive, like I don't want to describe it as like ADHD, but just the most just like, all right, what's the next page? Character creation, what do we got? There's drawing. Drawing, roll 3d6 and
yeah, yeah.
Just the whole time.
Yeah, no, that's vibes first for sure. I mean, that was the fun of it, and I think that's, I don't know, I really, people laugh when people ask like, oh, what was your inspiration, and I'll throw out that like Mark Borg was one of my big inspirations, but from a terms of like what a game book can be,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, like when I saw that, that's like one of those aha moments. It's like, oh, this can be anything I want.
Mm-hmm. Like, it can look all right. Yeah, why shouldn't I?
Yeah, it was a why shouldn't I, like, oh, if they can do that, I can do anything else. So it was inspiring, like, in a very literal way that way, where it was liberating.
I think that's not surprising. I think a big thing with the success of Morkborg and stuff is people looking at that and going, it could look like that. There's nothing stopping me from doing that. And my big thought with a lot of creative endeavors is a lot of times people don't need the permission to do it, and that someone needs to tell them that it's okay, but just they haven't considered that it's okay to do it that way, right? Yeah. They haven't considered that it's a possibility. And then you see something that is so actively like bold and is like, no, I'm just going to do this, whatever. I would love to talk to those guys. I would love to hear it from them directly. Just, it feels like that was made in defiance, or deference is the word that I want, of it being a successful product. It was like, yeah, I'm going to make it. It's going to look like that.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to look like, because that's how I want it to be, irregardless of anything else.
Right.
And that's cool. I love that was the thing, because I don't think $20, no one would ever think of, Ryan, what was your big inspiration for your cute princess game? Oh, fucking Morkborg. That was it. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Another inspiring point is, there was, this is not game related, but the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once, there was, the editor showed his layers in the editing program. Did you ever see that?
No.
So yeah, he opened up whatever software that he was using, and he showed his layers. It was a mess. Like, under the hood of that movie was like, not how you should do it at all. Like, the layers were a mess. They were terribly organized. There was way too many of them. Mm-hmm. It was like a monster to sort through. It looked like how you would, if you worked, I don't know, if you work in Photoshop or anything like else, like, organize your layers and keep them, you know, keep them easy for other people to use. This thing was atrocious. And then he won like for best editing, right? So mm-hmm. I remember seeing that and being like, oh, yeah, my process is going to be messy on this game, and it's going to be hard for anyone else to access it, at least for now, right? as I'm working more and more in it and bringing on more people to help and work with, it's getting more clear. But at the beginning, it was chaos, you know? And that was another thing that gave me permission to be as chaotic as I felt like I wanted to be.
I think it's fun, though, to do works in defiance of those sometimes, or in you know, acknowledgement, but like disbelief of just like, no, why would everybody say that? And then you do it and you go, oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
I never released it just because of how frustrating it was. I did a Game of the Year video that I recorded, and it doesn't look like this behind me anymore, but I used to have a TV like directly behind me, and I was like, you know what I'll do is I'll have footage of when I was streaming the game on the TV behind me, and then you know, that'll be cool. That's like kind of a depth element. And then I went to edit it, and I realized very quickly that in editing it, it's all going to look super screwy behind me in a way that's going to be really jarring and upsetting. And I went, this is why nobody does this. This is why nobody does this. Okay, that's good.
Sometimes you have to fuck around and find out, and then you find out.
Sometimes the only way to find out is to fuck around.
Yeah,
and sometimes that is in very. You have to find out yourself. You can only be, you know, you can be told some things, and some things you just have to go, ah, dag, nah, all right, we did it. Do you? I don't want to say, are you enjoying the process more, being in a creative director, but are you finding, you know, I guess I won't put a qualifier on it. How are you finding the process now that at least, you know, for Sweet Revenge, it's not the same for this, but did you find the production of Sweet Revenge like more enjoyable, less enjoyable with saying, hey, someone else is going to handle the words and then I'll just receive the words and then I can art and layout and stuff all around it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm much more comfortable in that space. That's where my background is. Mm. So I think at some point I think I have other ideas that I want to write out, maybe for other games or for other things to put with Perils and Princesses. But at least I think I'm able to create more. It lets me do the thing I want to do, which is to draw pictures, right? It just lets me do more of that. That's what I want to do more of. I want to, you know, and if I can work with cool people that have really cool ideas that helps build upon this thing I made and builds a community around it, like that's awesome. That's like a win-win. So to be lucky enough that Perils and Princesses like did well enough, I had money to reinvest into it and get, you know, bring other people on board. Yeah, it was, I mean, hugely fortunate, because then, yeah, I can just do more of what I want to do and what I feel I'm good at, or right, really good at. Yeah.
How does your, you know, ostensibly for Night Market, What was kind of your process for this? Did you, I think we talked about this a little bit at the top, but to get into a little more in depth, did you just say, Hey, Night Market is a cool idea, let's flesh this out to a whole adventure, whole campaign? Or, you know, were you just like doodling fun stuff? And then we talked about, you know, Sean and the Night Market and all that. Were you just like doodling ideas and you were like, oh, hang on, we got something here?
Yeah, I think, well, if you look at, this is one of my, I don't know if I posted on TikTok, I think maybe just Instagram. I posted my my character sheet for that campaign, and I wrote, I got one copy of Perils and Princesses that was like pretty badly damaged in the mail, like, or it was like miscut, like the whole top of it, like one big chunk was taken off the top. I was like, okay, this one's mine.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm going to write in it. I'm going to just take it. And so like, yeah, I'm always doodling when I'm doing anything or playing games specifically. So I had some doodles in there for sure. But yeah, that just started, I was like, Sean, just write it out. And then I started working on the cover while he was writing it. And then when I saw what he'd written, then I was like, okay, yeah, he sent me a draft and I started like roughing a layout, kind of seeing like, okay, where are the big illustrations going to be in this? Like which are going to be the key ones? Let's figure it out. And so I've got a list now. I'm kind of working through.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm always this is the next big question. So get ready for it. I've been thinking a lot lately about the relationship between specifically for TTRPGs, the relationship between like the game as text and the game as art, and then like the work as art. This popped up on Blue Sky. I saw an artist that I follow was talking about someone had reviewed a TTRPG that they had worked on and hadn't mentioned the art or credited them for it. And it was just kind of a basic lamentation of just like, sucks, right? Yeah. And it was interesting. I thought about that post for like a full day of the very strange like work that a TTRPG is, right? Such a strange creature, because you could take all of the art out of a game and it wouldn't change. You know, it would still be the game. It would still be whatever it is. And you can do that. And more, you know, more than a few people create games without kind of explicit art in that way. But it always feels like it's missing something. It always feels like it's, I don't want to say incomplete, but it's like, wow, there's not something there. But, you know, how, I guess the long winding question is like, how important is that interaction between the game text and the art? And I think you're, yeah, you know, uniquely qualified to answer this, at least for the last couple of people I've been talking to, because it's all coming from the same place.
Yeah, I mean, so it's funny. I was just on I was invited to speak on this panel for the American Library Association with a couple other illustrators who work on games, who are way more just. I was punching way above my weight being in this room. It was an honor that I was even asked there. Hannah Templer, who did Thirsty Sword Lesbians, it was a stacked panel, and I was lucky enough to be there and listen to everybody and throw my couple cents in. But everyone, you know, they were all big advocates of art and games because that's what they did. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things we talk about is how one, like, the moment you pick up a role playing book, you're interacting with the game. It's like a sense of like you're already playing. It's alone, but you are playing in a sense, because you're reading and you're looking and you're imagining something that hasn't happened, and you're thinking about how you're going to play, and you're thinking about about characters you might make or mm-hmm. how this might play out. Like you're playing, mm-hmm. right? And like we said before, it's a game of like role-playing games are a game of vibes, and a great shortcut to vibes, and one of the best shortcuts throughout history to a vibe is visuals, is artwork, is, you know, it's, and reading. So like the book in your, I'm a firm believer that like the book in your hand, or like the document, and then the visuals and the words are all, that is the game. Mm-hmm. You know, that is it. Like, you could play Magic the Gathering if the cards were just text, but man, they have like, it's the art. It's the art that makes, like, that's it. That's the part that, like, that's what takes it from being like super, like a super technical, boring game into like an imaginative world that people like are super into. Mm-hmm. And like with any kind of role playing games, like they work, like you said, they can work without it, and just be pen and paper and descriptions, and people, you know. But I think people have different abilities or different ways in which they relate with something that's imaginary. And, you know, some people can really relate through descriptions, and some people really want maps. And I think illustrations and visuals and maps are a great way to, like, get everybody on the same page immediately, especially for tone of something, mm-hmm. or for, like, what is this world that we're just talking about? What does it look like? And everyone's going to imagine something differently, but like illustrations just put, like, it's just a shortcut. It's such like a good illustration in the right place in a book is just like, it helps sell the idea of the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. It's a complicated kettle of fish, but it's something that, like, I'm interested isn't discussed more when we talk about games. You know, like I thought about that. Like I said, I thought about that post for like 24 hours, and that was a big part of it, was the idea of just like, you know, I don't know who did the art in some of my favorite games. I don't know if I, you know, I do the artists that I know because I know them, not like through their work or very rarely through their work. It's just like, oh, I, you know, I know someone who does TTRPG art, you know, not I picked up a book. Who's this art by? And so it was an interesting quandary of like, huh, having a lot of thoughts about this one. And I think we can all agree, listen, the only bad art is AI art. So
yeah, I don't even like to say those words all in one sentence.
AI generated to images, be more clear, because I also think it's fair to be broader than just AI images, you know, like AI text, AI video, AI whatever you got. That's whatever cool. Whatever you're cooking up.
My crusade when it comes to that is, we talked about this before, is how I always show the book, right? Mm-hmm. when I'm doing those things, is I will not get into any arguments about it. I will not even mention it. I am going to highlight artists, mm-hmm. whether they're old art or new or working artists or working creators. I'm just like not even
that's the best way to be though. I think is like don't even give it the air of the argument.
That's
there's I'm no argument.
I'm not even gonna buy, yeah. If someone, yeah. I'm just not, I don't have, I'm not interested. I don't care. Yeah. I don't want, that's not what I want to be talking about in the very least. So I don't even, right. I'm not like, if I'm not vocal about it, it's because I'm being very vocal about someone who's actually making art. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't even talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people that, especially today, I don't know. Well, I do know what happened, but a lot of people today, very specifically in the video game space, were like, yeah, you guys are losers. Like, like in so many words, like you guys are losers.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's the, like I said, the connection between text and art is the thing that like makes a TTRPG book something special and something kind of, it makes the work in art, you know, the whole package.
Yeah.
And I think the interplay is very fun.
Yeah. And that's why I love making them and I love looking at them. I think it's just it just tickles your brain on so many levels, where it's like reading and art and imagining a game that hasn't existed yet, and then playing that game, and then thinking about the next game, and then other, like, it's just such mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a very all-encompassing multimedia sort of art form, and which is really, I don't know, fun to engage with. I think that's why people like it, why I like it.
Mm-hmm. So Ryan, wrapping up, I'll ask you, we got our last question. So this is the three question. Last question I ask everybody is three something. Came up with it for the first episode, and then every time we have an interview, I just come up with it during the show, as just like a fun thing to go out on. So Ryan, what are your three favorite non-Disney princesses?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Three favorite non-Disney princesses. This is a good question. Okay.
And we can be loose with princesses.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. First one that came to mind is Princess Islandwe from the Chronicles of Prydain, aka the Black Cauldron. I guess maybe she is a Disney princess because Disney did a version of the Black Cauldron, but
oh, sure, I'm gonna sure.
But not really. not
non-Disney original, you know, like the yeah. people don't rush to Disney. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, yeah, the Prydain, the Book of Three, that whole series is awesome. She's like, she's got a cool history. She's got like a weird way of speaking. She's kind of like I don't know. I feel like J.K. Rowling ripped her off for Luna Lovegood. I think that was her name. Where she's like kind of like spacey, has like a weird, like these weird quirks of how she speaks, but she like really knows the score more than, you know, she's really the brains behind the whole operation, and keeps the main hero in check. The Taryn is always, she always keeps him in check. So that has to be like the first one on my list for sure.
Sure.
thinking about, well, I mean, we talked about it before. I feel like Frodo is a Disney, is a princess.
Sure.
For sure. I mean, his fairy godmother is Gandalf, obviously. He's got,
he does have a very specific Disney princess, like, arc of, like, things are going pretty chill. Things are all right.
Yeah.
Oh, big problem.
Yep.
You know, bigger problem than I'm equipped to deal with, but you know what? I got the heart and I got to solve it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, his whole thing is just being tough and tender the whole time. And power of friendship. I feel like Frodo for sure, especially in the world of Perils and Princesses.
Sure.
And then, which is the other one I should pick?
People always struggle with the third one because you realize, like, oh, this is the last one.
This is the last. I know this is the last.
Oh, whoops!
One.
This is the last one.
Oh boy. I cannot remember her name, the name of the character, but the book is called The Farthest Away Mountain by Lynn Reed Banks, and I mentioned it in the appendix of Perils of Princesses. Farthest Away Mountain, and that was a huge inspiration for the book, and I think it's a really this character goes on a quest. Yeah, it's Lynn Reed Banks did this. This is a fantasy one. I mean, she's mostly known for the Indian in the Cupboard series.
Oh, okay. That one in school. Yeah, no, I don't know if I've ever read the book. I definitely saw the movie a few times.
Yeah, but this one I think came out in the 70s, and it's very much this kind of like she wants to go on a quest to see what the deal with the Farthest Away Mountain is. She wants to meet a real life gargoyle, and she wants to marry a prince instead of all the like lousy villagers people want her to marry. And
those are good goals, honestly. Those are solid.
Yeah, she's like, I gotta get out of town, I gotta like, and just like on her own. And then she packs a couple things from her house, including some trinkets that end up being like big important things later. She deals with all these like all these perils on the way. It's very much was a huge inspiration for Perils and Princesses and how it worked. And it was just like one of my favorite fantasy books growing up. So, and I can't remember the name of the main character right now.
But a very quick skim of the Wikipedia article does not reveal it.
Oh, that's weird. I can grab it off my shelf really quick. It's just escaping me.
Yeah, it's just it's very funny. Is it Dokken or is that a different character?
Oh, yeah. No, it is.
Okay. Yep. It's not, they don't state it in the first paragraph as a way of introduction. And then it just sort of appears later. And I'm like, is that a new character?
Yeah, or? I was like, a new is a weird name. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't remember it, but yeah, no, that book is awesome. It's a middle grade book. It's like not when we're talking about like, is it for kids? This is for kids, but it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Those are great. I've just been so entranced with everybody's answers to these questions.
Yeah.
That I'm just this is a thing for me. This is a question for me. I'm just like, put you on the spot a little bit, make you come up with, you know, some tricky answers. I had an interview recently where I asked somebody their favorite three extrasolar planets, you know, planets that aren't in the solar system. Whoa. And I was like, this will be a great tricky question. No, they were right there. They had them ready because they'd done research. And I was like, I can't believe this. I'm so mad. I thought I had you. I thought we had a good one, but you were so ready.
I just lump all together. Right. Friends.
Oh, what are the other planets? I don't know, man. The other ones.
Yeah.
Out there. I don't got to worry about them.
They don't affect me.
Ryan, thank you so much for making time to come and chat with me. I've been joking, like, you know, with all the Zine Month and Kickstarter stuff, it's just so funny to be like, yeah, can you make 2 hours in your day during this incredibly stressful, you know, time restrictive time when you're working on all of these things? So I really appreciate you you know, making some time.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I love chatting about this stuff. Love to sit down with you. So thank you.
So real quick, Ryan, just little kind of introduction by way of outro. You know, just summarize yourself here at the end, where people can find you, and you know, kind of what you got going on.
Yeah, my name is Ryan Lynch. I go by Outrider Creative on the internet. I'm most active on, I've got too many social medias right now, so if, yeah, I'm Outrider Creative on TikTok and on the Instagram and on Blue Sky. Those are my big ones. But I made a game called Perils and Princesses, and there's a new adventure called The Secret of the Night Market, which will be crowdfunding pretty soon.
I'm excited to check it out. I need to, the next time we go to the game store, I'm definitely going to grab a copy of Perils of Princesses, because it was there last time. I never feel like I can say thank you enough. As always, all the links to Ryan's stuff, everything that we talked about, everything we mentioned, it's going to be really fun to look up all these children's books, will be linked in the show notes. So if you want to see any of the things that we talked about, click through, find all that out. That'll be linked in the show notes, all the links for the show, all that stuff. But that's been it. Ryan, say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
And that's the end. I want to thank Ryan so much for taking time to sit down and chat with me. I'm just such a big fan of the game and his work. It always blows me away. I've said it every interview now. It always blows me away. People take time out of their day to sit down, you know, talk to me about what they've got going on. They make time for my silly little jokes. And so it's always amazing. Like I said at the top, all the links to everything in the show notes, all the links to my socials, stuff for the show, in the show notes, all of Ryan's stuff in the show notes. The show notes are great. I spend a little bit of time getting the show notes together, so I hope that they have been helpful to people. I hope someone has gone, what the hell are they talking about? And they go to the show notes and there's a link there. If there's a thing that's not in the show notes that we talk about that somehow I miss, either I don't realize it came up, or I don't realize it needs to be talked about, or any other changes or anything like that, feedback at Matt Calder. You can send me an email and you can say, hey, Matt, in this episode with Ryan, you talked about such and such, and it wasn't in the show notes, and I think maybe it should be. And hey, I'll get that changed, and that'll all get taken care of. Anything else, like I said, you want to tell me, any other feedback, comments, questions, queries? I recently changed how the Patreon work. It is just a digital tip jar. Now, for $5 a month, you can support the show, help me pay for website and hosting costs, but nothing will be put behind a paywall. It started bugging me, and I really sat down and thought about it, and I said, you know what? I'm just going to put it out so that people can enjoy it. So all audio, video, anything that comes out as part of this project, unless, you know, things need it to be, will be available for free on Patreon, on the podcast feed, or on YouTube. A big thank you to anyone who supports the show. You know, telling your friends, rating would be great. And if you do support the Patreon, thank you so, so very much. I'm getting caught up on podcast interviews, which is good, but also stressful, because it means I have to schedule more. So I'm going to go work on some of those. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I'll see you in the next one.